So we're going to move into our period of formal sitting meditation. And as we begin, I really want to offer you this guiding intention that as we practice together today, to really allow yourself to pay special attention and special care to whatever would make you feel most settled, most nourished, most rested. It's so important that we take that time to nourish ourselves, and our practice is such a beautiful place for that. So I want to invite you just to close your eyes whenever you're ready. Arriving back here together. You might take a few deep breaths just to land here. And as you take those deep breaths, just noticing how that impacts the body. There might be a sense of settling that's beginning to form. A sense of slowing down. Really just gifting yourself that time of settling to arrive here. Almost like your entire being is a snow globe that's been swirling around, moving through your day, and now just letting it continue to settle. As you begin to arrive more fully, just beginning to notice the body. Noticing the feet and where they make contact with the ground beneath you. Seeing if you can feel the contact of the floor or your socks or shoes. Noticing if there's warmth or cool there. Moving your attention into the lower legs, the ankles, calves, knees. Almost as if you could feel from within the inside out. Noticing if there's tighter muscles or there's a sense of softness. Feeling the air or your clothing. Noticing if you can feel energy or warmth or movement, even within those lower legs. moving again into the upper legs, where these incredible strong bones and muscles live. Into the thighs and the hips. And just letting the thighs and the hips become heavy, steady. Just noticing what it feels like in this part of the body right now. Feeling the way even that gravity is here supporting you. Just bringing your awareness into your chest and your belly. Seeing if there's any softening, any relaxing that you can do here. Letting the belly become soft. Allowing yourself to feel just the ebb and flow of your own breath. Noticing how it feels, perhaps if you breathe a little bit deeper or slower. Really noticing. And bringing your attention now into the hands. You might feel warmth or tingling. Maybe the bones and muscles and the fingers. Maybe even offering some gratitude for these hands. All that they're able to help you do. Moving into the arms, letting yourself feel into the sensation of the forearms, the elbow, the upper arm. Into the shoulders. And as you bring your attention into the shoulders, you might even notice the way that your breath also moves them. and gentle rise and fall. And if there's any tightness or tension in the shoulders, just inviting it to soften ever so slightly. There's no need to force anything. Bringing the attention in this kind way up into the neck and the throat. Again, here you might notice the sensation of your own breath moving through the throat. And then moving into the head and the face. Really getting curious about the incredible array of sensation in the face. And just letting your attention be naturally drawn. You might notice the forehead or eyebrows, eyes or cheeks that have been smiling. A jaw that's maybe tense or relaxed. We're constantly expressing through our face. But how often do we actually turn inwards to feel what it's like? When we sense into the physical sensation of the face, it's like we're sensing into the echoes of all of the expressions, all of the looks. And all the ways that we've connected with others, expressed our emotion. Bringing your attention even into the ears and the scalp. And as you are ready, letting go of this more single-pointed, investigative attention, and allowing yourself to be with the whole body, with all of its sensation, its stillness and movement, its heat and cool. Really taking in this present moment experience of the whole body, your body. And just letting yourself use this full body presence as an anchor in whatever way feels best to you. You might notice the breath and the whole body breathing. And you might want to turn your awareness towards the arising and passing of sensation in the body. Or you may want to continue with a body scan in the way that we've been practicing. Whatever you choose, just letting that choice be one that supports your sense of restfulness, your sense of continued settling and grounding. Just staying with the body. And if the mind wanders off, just gently bringing it back. if you've gotten lost in thought or distracted in any way, it's fine. Just returning to the body in whatever way feels best to you. Just being with the body, knowing there is a body right here, right now. And in the final minutes of our practice together, Just noticing if you can bring your attention towards anything in the body that feels good, or anything within the body that you feel grateful for. And for those of us who may experience chronic illness or pain, knowing that this can be something really small and simple. Our body's ability to hug someone we love, or the sensation of the closed eyelids touching one another, feeling restful and soothing. It doesn't have to be big. And whatever it is, just really allowing yourself to soak that in. That pleasant sensation, or that peace you're grateful for, or both. Just letting the mind rest here on this thing that is good. And as you're ready, just letting yourself open your eyes. And as you do, noticing what it's like to see. This quality of seeing, this quality of your ability to hear my voice right now. This is also part of the body. It's something we often take for granted. So just returning to the room. Thank you for your practice. Good to sit with you. So today, I wanted to share a little bit with you around a couple pieces. I wanted to talk with you about rest, nourishment. I also wanted to talk to you about the Bodhisattva vow, this vow to be of goodness and of service to the world. It's something I think the world probably needs a whole lot of right now. There is a Buddhist deity, Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. And you might actually, if you can see me on the screen, behind me over there, there's a really big, beautiful print of Avalokiteshvara. And she is the Bodhisattva of infinite compassion, also known as the one who hears the cries of the world. And depending on your tradition and the language that's typically used within your Dharma practice, Avalokiteshvara is also known as Chenrezig, and also is an emanation of Kuan Yin. So holding this deep, deep energy of profound compassion. And Chenrezig or Avalokiteshvara is usually depicted with an infinite number of hands and often with eyes right there in the middle of her palms, so that she is able to see the suffering of this world and of all the worlds beyond this world that we can't see, and able to extend with those all-seeing hands, those infinite hands, compassion in every single direction. And in these hands, there are an infinite number of means to extend compassion. Everything from lotus blossoms that are representing awakening and enlightenment, a vase of sweet, nourishing nectar, and also swords meant to cut through delusion and greed and hatred. Because there are so many ways to show up with compassion. And sometimes the best way to show up with compassion is that gentle, nourishing, generous heart. And sometimes it's through that fierce compassion, that sword that cuts through delusion. There's so many ways that compassion can find its way into the world. The late Zen teacher, John Dido Lori, says, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva is the hearer of the cries of the world. And one of the characteristics of Avalokiteshvara is that she manifests herself according with the circumstances. So she always presents herself in a form that's appropriate to what's going on. In the Bowery, she manifests a bum, he writes. Tonight in bar rooms across the country, she'll manifest as a drunk, or as a motorist on the highway, or as a fireman, or a physician, always responding in accord with the circumstances and in a form that's appropriate to the circumstances. And so he asks, how is that? He says, every time there's a stranded vehicle on the side of the road and a motorist stops to help, that Avalokiteshvara has manifested herself. These characteristics of wisdom and compassion are actually the characteristics of all being, all Buddhas. We all have that potential. It's just a matter of awakening it, he writes. And you awaken it by realizing that there's actually no separation between self and other. And so within all of us, this infinite compassion, these qualities of Avalokiteshvara dwells. In the small moments when we help a friend, or when we dedicate some aspect of our lives to the well-being of the world, it happens when we plant a garden and nourish the birds and the insects. During the walking period, I was outside and my attention was really drawn towards the bees in our garden. It's an act of compassion to water the garden and let the plants and the animals and the insects have that nourishment. There's compassion available in big and small ways right here, right now. One of the origin stories told about Avalokiteshvara is this. One day, this is story time now. One day, Avalokiteshvara looked down into the many hell realms and she saw all the suffering there. And seeing all of that suffering, I think we can probably relate to that. Avalokiteshvara made a great vow. It just sprung up naturally in her heart. And she vowed, I will liberate all beings from the suffering of all the hells. And so she set to work, and she worked through countless ages, on and on. And it feels this way sometimes. I think those of us who are committed to doing good in the world, descending into the hell realms and rescuing all the suffer beings, doing the help, doing as much as she could. And so Avalokiteshvara did this over and over and over, descending into hell, bringing beings back out with her until the hell realms were empty, until it was quiet and peaceful. And after eons and eons of hard work, it was done. And she smiled with such relief. It was peaceful. The fires were out, and even the demons were gone. She had saved them too. And then moments later, a voice cried out. And then another and another. And the flames leapt back up, and the smile faded from her face. Because once again, in the blink of an eye, all of those hell realms were filled again. And the heart of Avalokiteshvara broke open. Her head split into many heads, her arms shattered into many arms with that heartbreak. And those 1,000 heads looked in all directions to see the suffering of every being, while all of those 1,000 arms reached out to keep on helping them. And so rolling up 1,000 sleeves, she set back to work. And it feels like this sometimes, right? Especially right now. There's so much difficulty and so much suffering in our world that I think for many of us, it feels almost impossible to know where to begin, let alone how to help. Many of us are feeling overwhelmed or exhausted, and rightly so. To an extent, the amount of tragedy and confusion that we're facing on a regular basis right now, it's almost more than a human can actually process and integrate. And so I've been sitting with this contradiction, this tireless bodhisattva, and my own pretty tired heart. And there's one truth that feels really profound and really simple to me. And it's our need for rest, our need for nourishment, our need to really take care of ourselves in the midst of all of this. It is such a deep human need. And what we all too often leave out when we think about this bodhisattva vow, this endeavor to alleviate the suffering in the world, is actually our own selves, our own delicate, fragile bodies, our own tender hearts. The bodhisattva vow that's taken up by many Buddhist practitioners, there are many slightly different versions of it, but one version is this. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them all. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. The Buddha's way is unsurpassable, and I vow to become it. When I was first taught about this vow, one of the things that was underlined almost right away was that this is an impossible vow. It's a paradox. Infinite beings, infinite delusion, infinite doors to the Dharma. And our humble and heartfelt wish just to try and do it anyway. This is more than a marathon. To reach enlightenment, the Buddha is said to have lived lifetimes across 3 incalculable eons. So a measure of time that's actually not possible to measure. It's a really long time. Well, so to an extent, we also need to be really gentle and compassionate with ourselves. Sometimes we feel like we've got to get it all done right now. There's such a sense of urgency. And it is urgent. But we need to also reflect on what do we need if we're going to really walk this path. And one of the biggest things most easily forgotten is that need for rest, for settling, for safety. And we live in such a time when our attention is a hot commodity. We're being inundated really on all sides. Many of us feel all the pressures of society, all the need of change in this world, and are also working 40 or 50 or 60 hours a week, taking care of families, coming home to pressure that in addition to all of that, we should be exercising, working on ourselves, cooking healthy organic meals, reading lots of books. This is a lot of pressure. And in some ways, this in and of itself feels like a different kind of an impossible vow. We find ourselves grieving the shootings, the Supreme Court, climate change, so much right now. And then we also find ourselves under immense pressure in our daily lives. Our health, our family, our finances, there's so much. And the truth is, at some point, something's got to give. And for many of us, what we accidentally sacrifice is ourselves. And that's why this practice is so important. And maybe the most important when we feel like we don't actually have the time for it or the bandwidth. I know for me, often when I feel some avoidance around practicing, it's usually an indicator that when I sit down, my grief, my worry, how tired I am, that need for rest and joy, that desire for more play and spaciousness is what's going to come flooding in. And so sometimes we put it off because we don't actually want to feel what we really need. But we have to listen to that even when it's hard. A Dharma teacher, Mushin Patricia Ikeda, a few years back, she wrote this incredible article about being a bodhisattva and endeavoring not to burn out. And so she writes, how many of us have taken the bodhisattva vow are also on a similar path to burnout? Is it possible for us as disciples of the Buddha to engage with systemic change, to grow and deepen our spiritual practice, and if we're lay people, also care for our families? How can we do all of this without collapsing? In my world, there always seems to be way too much to do, along with too much suffering and societal corruption, and not enough spaces of deep rest and regeneration. When I get desperate, she writes, which is pretty often, I ask myself how to not be overwhelmed by despair or cynicism, for my own sake, for my family, for my Sangha. I need to vow not to burn out. And I ask others to vow similarly, so they'll be around when I need them for support. And she's actually created a great vow to support the bodhisattva vow that she calls a great vow for mindful activists. And it goes, aware of the suffering and injustice, I, Juliana Slaughter, you, am working to create a more just, peaceful, and sustainable world. And I promise, for the benefit of all, to practice self-care, mindfulness, healing, and joy. I vow not to burn out. And I just want that to land with you for a moment and notice, you know, she's not talking about just working our butts off. She's talking about healing and joy and rest. These are some of the qualities that we need to prioritize if we're going to make this paradoxical vow. And, you know, even the Buddha learned about this when he was just days away from reaching enlightenment. He'd actually been practicing in the forest and he'd been engaging in really deeply ascetic practices. It was a real philosophy at the time that if you could tame your body, you could also tame your mind. And it was said at this time, part of this practice for him was really not eating, only a few grains of rice a day in this effort to sort of conquer the body. And he was weak and actually really on the verge of starving. And a woman, Sujatha, just happened upon him in the forest. She was bringing an offering, a bowl of rice and milk to a tree spirit, a deva, to thank it for helping her conceive a child. But when she saw the Buddha, she knew that this needed to go to him. And she insisted on it and took care of him and helped to revive him, nourished him. And it said that they really brought him back to life from the brink of death, Sujatha, with this generous and nourishing act. And this was part of what fueled the Buddha towards awakening. Receiving this generous, nourishing sustenance that was actually a counter to the extreme that he'd been going to. He started to see like, oh, it's actually not black and white, either total asceticism and self-abnegation or total hedonism. There's actually something in the middle that also includes being happy, being nourished, resting. And they say just a day or so later, he sat at the foot of the Bodhi tree and he practiced through the night and woke up. Had it not been for that moment of nourishment and rest, that wouldn't have happened. And look how that's rippled outwards, right? 2,500 years later, here we are. Each one of us has, right now or in the past, had a part of ourselves that is starving like the Buddha was. And each one of us has a part of ourselves that is ready to come and help and offer that generous, nourishing, delicious sustenance like Sujatha. That hungry part may need rest. It may need compassion. It may need encouragement or kind words. It may actually need fun or play, you know, the kind that as adults we don't really get enough of. I think that's very, very important actually for us to sustain our ability to live and care and help in this world. We might need to heal some old wounds, do some of that deep work to just release, set free those burdens we carry. That hungry part might need to feel connected, might to feel like it's a part of something, or that it's loved, or that it has choice or agency or power. Each one of you has the capacity really to use your discernment, your mindfulness practice, your kind attention to turn towards that, to go inwards and actually investigate what medicine is needed at this time. You know, they say Avalokiteshvara shows up in the form and context that's appropriate. And so within you, there is also a form and a context that is appropriate medicine right now. And I actually want to invite you in to do just that for just a few minutes. And so I want to invite you to close your eyes and to just let yourself sit back, feeling your back against the chair. Noticing where your breath goes as you breathe in. Noticing where your breath goes as you breathe out. And just letting yourself move inwards with your breath into that place within you that knows. And just dropping in that question, what do I need right now? What part of me needs to be nourished or tended to? Just letting whatever arises, arise. Letting yourself receive whatever information, images, or words and dropping that question in one more time. What do I need? Just noticing what it feels like in your body as you receive this information. And opening your eyes again. And I want to invite you to actually type a word or two in the chat. What's come up? What needs to be nourished or tended to? Yeah, and the chat is open. Yeah, connection, easeful work. Yes, beautiful. Clarity, yeah. Yeah, so often we don't actually pay as much attention to those needs that are like a mental or intellectual sort of frame of mind need. Clarity, yes. Fun, yes. Physical rest, healing chronic illness. Yes, I hear that one. Peace. Yeah. Make time for nourishing food. Oh, connect with my culture, joy. Yes, beautiful. Gratitude for the bodhisattva within. Yeah, rest and healing to the womb. Yeah. Affection and warmth. Beautiful. As you walk the bodhisattva path, what's arising in the chat, that need that's a popping in, joy and playfulness, affection, warmth, healing. You're included in that circle of care. And it's essential. If you're going to care for the world and you're going to care for other people, that you bring that same care inwards as hard as it is to do sometimes in our world. But, you know, even just seeing these pop into the chat, I imagine you're probably feeling resonance with many of them. I know I am. And this is a way that we can begin to just drop in and see what's needed for ourselves so that we can adhere to that great vow that Mushim has written about, that vow not to burn out, that vow to make sure that we get the healing that we need, the rest we need, the play in order to keep going. Shantideva wrote this Bodhisattva prayer. And just to close this portion of our time together, I want to read a small excerpt from it. And as I read it, I want you to hold in your heart really that wish to help others, but also the wish that this includes you. Shantideva wrote, "May I be a protector to the helpless, a guide to those traveling the path, a boat to those wishing to cross over, or a bridge or a raft. May I be land for those requiring it, a lamp for those in darkness. May I be a home for the homeless and a servant for the world. In order to fulfill the needs of all beings, may I be as a magic gem, an inexhaustible vase, a mystic spell, a cure-all medicine, and a wish-granting tree." May we show up for ourselves in these ways as we also show up for others.
Please consider supporting Dharma Seed with a year-end gift. Your donations allow us to offer these teachings online to all. Visit dharmaseed.org/donate to learn more. And thanks.